This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
All right, we got stuff to talk about on the Nancy Guthrie case. Some new interesting things have taken place. The opening hours of this case are the ones that stretch where the facts are actually locked, not theories, not leaks, but machine timestamps and a 911 log that is now out there. A camera goes dark at 1:47 in the morning. A pacemaker loses its signal at 2:28. Later that day, after a call that Nancy had missed church, family walks into her home and is on the phone with 911 within 7 minutes. What those first hours now show us, what the records prove, what's still being kept from the public, and what a fast by-the-book start says about a case that's frozen ever since is worth slowing all the way down on. And that's what we're going to be doing today. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining myself, and Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Jen, let's start with what we know about the time. The family, the record puts them in the house at 11:56. They're on the phone with 911 by 12:03. So they get in. Where's mom? Let's look around. I mean, it's a very reasonable, oh God, what the hell's going on? Just within 10 minutes about of them calling 911 once they get to the house. When you're looking at this from an investigative standpoint, what does it tell you about the speed of the call? What kind of a tell is that about that family that's in distress knowing mom is not there?
Well, it tells me that I believe they went in through the garage because that's how they let her in, and it seemed like that was their usual pattern. They went in, and again, mom, where are you? Mom got the call. You look around, and these grounds are not easy. This is not just a three-bedroom, two-bath ranch. This is a larger, spread-out house on a large property. So from there, you're going to always go in and check her guest house just in case she went in there, heard something, had to get something out of there. Obviously, you're looking in the pool and you're looking at all rooms. And when you look at this time frame, that pretty much sets up about 7 minutes likely to accomplish all of that. And to me, when they then went out that front door and looked from the front door vantage and saw the blood, 911, oh my God, she's gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's the moment that I'm sure their hearts probably sunk. I mean, at first, I imagine anything could be going through your head. You know, did she get picked up somewhere? Did she go for a walk? She couldn't go for a walk. Her cane's right here. All these things running through their minds in that sheer moment of panic. And then they see the blood on that porch. The 911 call is the one that started everything. And all of this time later, the public still hasn't heard a second of the 911 call yet. It's being held back, they say, for the investigation itself. But you've been on the inside of calls like that. When the recording that kicked off this whole case still stays locked up for this long and we still don't have her, well, I guess what's being protected? Why can't we hear the 911 call?
They're always going to protect that call in a case like this. And they did the same thing in the Idaho 4 case. We never heard that call until well into the adjudication of that case. True. So they're going to follow that. There's no reason. The public doesn't need to know. The clues with the torch by spruce and if a vehicle, that's what the public can help with. They're not going to release anything unless the public can provide help. Other than that, they don't care that the public doesn't.
Yeah, I'm really curious about the 911 call, Jen, because only when we started looking at this, like, oh my gosh, we haven't had the 911 call, especially since 911 calls, as you know, are so telling because you can really predict whether someone has involvement or not involvement a lot of times, not all times, but a lot of times from a 911 call. I would think if they're looking to clear family and show how they're not involved, just how they make that 911 call could really dispel a lot of those conspiracy theories on it, I would think. Any thoughts on that?
So I find it interesting, Robin, that in so many cases, no matter what the person says on the 911 call, it's going to be scrutinized. If they're panicked and go crazy, they say, oh my gosh, it's an act. If they are calm, they say, see, they don't even care that she's missing. So to me, there's no upside if I'm an investigator to release the call because I think it it makes the dogs come out against the family no matter what was said, especially when the dogs were already released on the family.
And unless you actually know 911 calls and you can see it really readily, and to help tamp those people down. I mean, the 911. So when I worked at Quantico, we had an amazing woman. I don't know if you remember Sue Adams. She used to teach at Quantico, at the FBI Academy, a lot for many years. She did a great research study with another law enforcement professional years ago, and they actually did the research on it, and they came up with a formula on 911 calls. I think that had about 90% accuracy, being able to tell whether the call was actually the perpetrator of the crime themselves. So there's a lot of studies from the statement analysis. I know it doesn't help the general public at large, but hopefully maybe that's part of the see, that's why it would have helped if Nano said something to the effect of, we analyzed the 911 call. The BAU analyzed the 911 call. That was part of our way that we got rid of the family as suspects, rather than just say, no, they're not considered anymore.
Yeah, no, they could have listed so many things. For instance, the results. They could have talked about the digital trail. They could have talked about all the car information that disclosed that, listen, every Saturday night they go back and forth this way. Uber's called, and then, you know, key drops are off. They could have done so much, but I think, you know how law enforcement is. They're going to say the bare minimum they can to get the point across, and they're not going to give up much about what they did or didn't do.
It's not too late. Why don't they do it now?
Yeah, no kidding.
It would help Nanos. But Nanos is being quiet, right? I think Nanos has like learned his lesson. Somebody's gotten through to him. Just shut up. You know, he finally is in the clear, if you will. Nobody can get rid of him. I don't think the recall vote, that's the only thing left outstanding, and I don't think that's going to work. So he's kind of in the clear. So he's gone turtle. You know?
I mean, I'm wondering about, you know, because of, you know, the dogs that were unleashed on the family immediately, and then Nanos, a little while after, makes it somewhat generic. And look, I'm stating this as I don't believe the family's involved, but I'm stating this in a perspective of, okay, he makes his statement of they're cleared as generically as he does. And that almost like further enrages the conspiracy theories out there. Why not come out and say, okay, yeah, I gave you the generic version, but here's why I've cleared them. This, and this. This is the evidence. We have it now. I should have released it earlier. I did not. It helps him. It clears up his shortcomings, and it helps the family. If they have absolutely nothing here to hide, and I don't think they do, it further solidifies their story as well and their alibi. I guess why not at this point come out with more solid, you know, evidence-based decision-making background on some of these, you know, words that he's thrown into the ether? If they're there, why are they there? I believe there's probably a reason for it, but why not shut down the noise, I guess, at this point? Or do they just not care about the noise? Because I know the family certainly cares about the noise around this.
I think because it'll cause more noise. It's opening Pandora's box.
Yeah. So
they polygraph. Okay, now we want to see them. When were they polygraphed?
Yeah.
What happened? Polygraph. Okay, let's see the digital evidence. You've already disclosed that it's there. So what's it going to hurt to let us know about it? So I think it just opens Pandora's box, and that's why they're not going to touch it.
Makes sense.
I get that. It's a shame, you know, but there are a lot of, you know, I mean, we're critical thinkers on our show. It would help the critical thinkers that have actually critically thought through the family not being involved. It would help tamp down the nutters, because you're always going to have nutters. There's always going to be people that are conspiracy theorists. And without a little bit, again, I'm not arguing it because I totally get it. It opens up Pandora's box again, but then it gets more attention on the case again. And then you have critical thinking people out here that are saying, hey, look, because boom, 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 look over here. I don't know.
True. Yeah. I mean, it's a battle of feelings at this point, but there's obviously some, you know, real repercussions for how things were handled early on in this. And I'm not just speaking from the Nano standpoint. The night itself left a trail. Her camera dies at 147, motion trips at 212. Her pacemaker drops off at 228. These are actual timestamps that we now have. When you line those three up in that order, Jen, I mean, what stands out to you? Is there anything chilling about the way that lays out? How does that read to you?
Well, a couple of things. One of the things is, let's start with the 212 in the middle. At the 212, where a person is seen, right? They can't make anything out, but they believe it's a person. And remember, that's another one of the spontaneous utterances of Nanos, right? Mm-hmm. He says, and he's like, oh, or it could be a pig or whatever, an animal. I think he says something like that. But yeah. I mean, clearly a person. And or else that wouldn't be on the timeline. And he wouldn't have made the spontaneous utterance. Anyway, so now we're at 212. Mope, porch guy, is not in any hurry that we've seen on camera. And I wouldn't believe that behavior would suddenly change at 212. So now he meanders over to the back. And now he's got to open a door. So he's got to breach the door. We still don't know for sure whether a door was left open or was it, whether it wasn't. But nevertheless, let's just say he has to breach it. If he has to breach it, that takes some time. I think I can breach a door that doesn't have a deadlock in probably under 2 minutes. So let's just say that he knows how to do that. He does it under 2 minutes. If it's a deadbolt, that's even more difficult. But now he's got the door breach. He gets it. That's a period of time. And there's only from 212 to 228 with the disconnection. Then he has to go in. And if he has studied her layout of her house, he could go pretty quickly there and make the assumption she's in the bedroom. Then he has to grab her, get her. I think that there is some violence used. And I say that because I truly believe that blood is expirated on the porch, which is typically a sign of internal bleeding.
Uh-huh.
And so I think he probably violently grabs her. And for somebody who is as frail as she is on blood thinners, I think that that probably caused some damage. And he grabs her. I think he puts her over the shoulder or in this stance where her head is a little bit closer to the ground and grabs her. Remember, she's over 150 pounds.
Yeah.
This is not an easy task if it's just him. The door, he has already got the camera off. He opens it from the inside, walks out with her. And that time frame pretty much comports.
So we're talking, I mean, how long are we talking here in terms of minutes of them getting into the house and getting her out when we're looking at this data that now is out there? What are we at?
16 minutes from the time. He is seen on the side of the house. Remember, porch guy in an injury. He mopes over there, goes to the back, looks around. I think I'll go in this door. For some reason, he props open the doors. I don't think those were propped up. And I know some people said, well, maybe she liked a breeze. My problem with that is she knows there's javelinas out there and wildlife. I mean, that's why she got the cameras.
I mean, a thought process might be too, like, I'm going to have to carry her, prop it open so it's open, but then go get her, then just don't shut the door when you leave. I don't know. I mean, that might be part of the thought process. Robin, what are your thoughts?
I'm just still thinking about trying to sling her over my shoulder with a backpack on at 150 pounds. That's, you know, I'm just thinking about the awkwardness of trying to do that. Like you're saying, Jen, or was he carrying in front of her and carrying 150 pounds like a sack? That's a large feat. I mean, that's a huge feat. I don't know how the guy kind of going to the point where a lot of people are saying this is well planned out because he's still at large. Yeah, kind of. But like this looks like if he's targeting her, getting her out of there was a real fatal flaw in how he's going to execute that. Like you said, I agree. I think he probably grabbed her quickly once they encountered each other. Her being frail, but frail at 150. I mean, that's think about this. That hefty backpack he on really jutted out from his back, and you're trying to get something over your shoulder, so she's not going to be draping down the back of his back. She's going to be sliding forward. Again, you're just kind of putting yourself in that situation. That's a hard carry.
Was that part of, I guess we got to go back to, then was taking Nancy the intent, or was Nancy being taken like an oh shit moment of, now I got to carry her out of here because she's part of the evidence because I got my DNA on her from whatever it may be, scratching or whatever. I don't know. I mean, because again, if you're thinking he's going into this to steal or to do something of that nature, he looks equipped for that. He doesn't necessarily look like he's equipped and ready to haul somebody out. That doesn't, I don't know that
unless
he'd go in.
To walk out.
Yeah, go into there with, I don't know. I've never done this. You guys have far more experience in worlds of this nature than me. But I don't know. It doesn't, I agree. It doesn't necessarily look like that was part of the plan. But again, nothing's necessarily stolen either, other than Nancy. So we're back at square one. What was the intent you're going in? Knowing what we see of this timeline, knowing how short this was, about 16 minutes or so from start to finish. Jen, where are you at this week with it? Do you think the intent was a wrench attack or just an attempt to take Nancy, period? Or does this lean more into a surprise and they took Nancy out because, you know, she was basically part of the evidence?
I've been square for months on this. This was a ransom gone bad. That's it. Now, as far as who's pulling the strings on it, I'm definitely leaning toward a more organized wrench type attack in this type of a deal. But I have believed from the onset, not one thief I know goes in with a backpack like that. That's what you take empty to fill up with all the things you're going to steal. You ransack the place. You typically have more than one person. You don't this obscure place. I have never believed, not at one moment, that this was a home invasion or some thieves that it all went south. Never believed that personally. I've always said the abduction was the point. And when they go in there and take her, I agree with Robin also based on the blood spatter. If she is slung over the shoulder, I think the mist and the spatter that would have come out from where she was bleeding, you would see those pockets of emptiness on the blood that drops. And you don't see that. You also don't see footprints, is why I think he did it solo. I don't think there were two people, at least at this point of it, because I think you would see footprints. And you would see that blood smudged and messed up. And that's why I think the family didn't go in the front. Because if you were going in the front, how often do you really look down?
Yeah.
You would have just walked up there in a hurry, but their modus operandi is always to go to that garage, seemingly, right? That's how she got in the night before. So I think that was the oh crap moment. And I really believe, and this is how I've described it from the beginning, that it wasn't a fireman's carry. It was more of a cradled carry. And you're right, Robin, that he had to have steps for that.
So let's go down the road of your theory of targeted either by a group or organization or him as an individual. In either event, because of the way he prepped himself, if he's solo in there, which it looks like we're agreeing he is solo in there, the intent was not to incapacitate her 100% because he wasn't prepared for incapacitation. He wasn't equipped for it. And if a group organization was behind this, they have reps in this. If this is something he's been doing before and it's a wrench attack, they have reps in this. And the reps would say, if your intent was to carry her out of there incapacitated, this is not the way it would have looked. So I definitely think that if that was the intent, the intent was to remove her from the house under her own motor skills, not to have to carry her out, because it makes no sense about how they did it whatsoever. Someone that had at least done it once before where they incapacitated the victim would not have done it that way.
I agree. And I also believe that these wrench, and we'll just keep going with that theory, meaning somebody organized that's making these decisions that initially targeted her and then got somebody to do this through payment, which is our Moat Porch guy. If that is the premise, these individuals are not, this could have been, and I think it was likely his first rodeo. You know, he's on the dark web getting picked out. And he wants to do it. He wants the money. He wants to be Rambo for a night. And it doesn't mean that he's good at what he's done, because you're right. He doesn't have the reps. He can't even figure out how to pull off the ring camera because his gloves are five sizes too big. You know, and then he has to get that and grip it and take both hands and you know, get that plant matter deposited deep into the holder.
Yeah.
So it was just waving it. A lot of people, again, that, you know, I know it's psychobabble that, you know, the Ivy like it meant something. I just don't think that's the case here. I think it was purposeful.
I don't see a world where the plant matter was pre-planned. Like, oh yeah, just go grab some plants and that'll work out great for whatever. It's like, yeah, that seemed to be a desperate move of like, we'll do you get some traction using this. Okay, do that. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be the work of a super experience. But and that's the weird thing with these wrench attacks is I've studied up on them too this week. I mean, it essentially doesn't matter. You know, who your idiots are, your mopes are that you're using. Because if it all goes to hell, it's not going to be traced back to you anyhow. And you can just try it with another person next time. And there's a first time for everything for folks who want to sign up for missions like this. And again, this might be the first time for this guy. And this is what you got.
He was pretty fluid for a first time, though, so it might have been a first. So, again, going down Jen's theory, if he's hired by someone as a mope, it wasn't his first time doing a B&E because he was fluid. That might have been his first attempt at this. Then it goes back to my question for you, Jen. So if the intent, if we're looking at behaviorally, we're looking at intent for a wrench attack, she's got to be alive, got to be conscious, and he wasn't prepared to have to be carrying her out. So her being incapacitated was not part of the plan. So then why remove her and not leave her?
Oh, I totally agree. But I don't think necessarily, I mean, she wasn't dead and he would have known that.
Right. Right.
If she were dead, she couldn't expirate. So just because somebody isn't mobile enough, like you need them to be, the cane was left behind. We know that now for certain. I don't think she walked out on her own accord.
Definitely not.
Recently though, a crime scene reconstructionist type person, they said she did and that she was actually like crawling and was that close to the ground. I just don't believe that. I think he was like, we're getting out of here, grandma. And I think it's likely she could have even been unconscious and that wasn't expected. I don't think she was dead.
Yeah. So if she's bleeding, and he had her crawl out of there, I think you'd have a DNA trail of something if she was doing it that way. Because I think any other bodily fluids coming off of her was being absorbed by him, whatever he was wearing. So to cover that his tracks unintentionally on the way out. It's the whole thing's crazy.
Another week and more questions than answers, really, on this. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue that part of the conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.